Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux to the Rest of Us, episode 150. This is a show about Linux. We cover all sorts of topics, software, hardware, news. And by we, I mean myself, Cody Cooper, a.k.a. The Ice Machine, and my good friend, the Door to Door Geek, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin, a.k.a. The Linux Maven. How's it going, Door?
Hey, Cody. Doing pretty good. I'm happy to say the holiday season is over, but the hectic time of the year seems like it's still going on. I think I have like another month of this left.
Oh, wow.
You know, because then at the end of Valentine's Day is my youngest son's birthday. Hopefully then we'll get into the downtime of the year.
Yeah. I'm still kind of full bore through the end of January at work. And then we're busy here at the house. I'm tearing apart my office. It looks like a tornado hit the place right now, but got my new setup started. Need to install the upper part of my new desk in here, and we'll be much better. But yeah, definitely keeping busy.
Gotcha. Very cool. I just wanted to do two quick things in the beginning of this episode. One, if you've forgotten, I don't know how you could have forgotten, Jonathan Nadeau has his Orca campaign on Indiegogo, Indiegogo, to help make the Orca screen reader better for visually impaired people around the world. This campaign was extended by 30 days, so it will end on Valentine's Day. I will say he got a little bit of a push from Reddit, where it got posted to Reddit the other day, and it definitely drew some more traction. But I'll say this, it's proven to me more than ever, financial contributions are nice. They're very nice. They help. But pushing this on other networks is the real key to this thing being successful. Push this out on your Twitter. Push this out on your Facebook. Push this out on your company's bulletin board system. Push this out on your Reddit thing that you're on. Push this out everywhere you possibly can. More eyeballs need to see this. I'm not trying to sound dumb, but if Grand Theft Auto 5 can make $1 billion in 4 days, Jonathan should have no problem raising $100,000. It's just my personal belief. But it takes people telling other people about this. Because all the hype that led up to GTA 5 was all people talking to other people about what they wanted to see in it. People need to tell other people about this issue that's going on in computing, how many people in the world are being left behind because they do not have accessibility. We need to remind people this is an issue and you can help make it better.
Most definitely. And as of this recording today, it still has 29 days left. So the extension for the extra 30 days just took place within the last 48 hours. And he's nearly doubled his contributions from 1 week ago today. So congratulations.
Yep, absolutely. It's going in the right direction, but that does not mean we should stop. We should now continue on and push harder than ever. Because only as a community, and by this, I don't mean the Linux for the Rest of Us audience or the Pod Nuts audience. Everyone who already has looked at this and seen this, you are now nominated, not by choice, into this place. We need to get this moving further. We need to get this moving faster. We need to get as many eyeballs to see this as possible. Mm-hmm. Now with that, the second thing I want to mention again is do not forget thinkpenguin.com. If you're in the market for a computer and you want to support open hardware with all this NSA stuff going on, trust me, hear me now, believe me later. We all know and understand why open software is vital to security. Well, guess what? Open hardware is just as important to this. Open hardware is only going to gain in people's consciousness of being important. Well, Think Penguin's already ahead of the curve. They're already making sure what they offer people is as open as they can possibly get. And I will say, do not forget, they have their little Wii computers, W-E-E, bigger than a hockey puck, smaller than a set-top DVR kind of thing. I'd say it's like a few Rokus put together. They now have, their fourth generation one, has a Haswell CPU. A Haswell CPU, people. This is insane. I'm tempted to start taking money from advertisers for the next month so I can buy me one of these things. Because that's cool. I really want one.
And it's a good company to support. They're taking their beliefs to another level and really providing the community with completely open hardware. And trust me, they do. And I spoke to the owner when I was at NELF last year. Great guy. And very, very passionate. You could tell, especially when you meet people at conferences at those booths door, you know, and anybody else who's attended, you can know that when they're just running through the same script in their head and they're kind of dead in the eyes, just like, oh yeah, and here's the features and this and that. But that guy, you know, just a great, great handshake, good interaction with him from beginning to end. And knowing that not only is he providing the community with a good product, but if I can do that to support him as well, it's a win-win in my book.
Absolutely. Yes. Chris is good people, and there's no doubt in my mind of his level of commitment. He's in it for the long haul. He's going to be around a long time. There's very, very little doubt with that. Man, I like this. And I'll even say this. He's even so open on this little Wii computer, WEE 4th Gen Haswell processor. He even says compatible with Microsoft Windows 7, and then in little brackets beneath it, we do not offer technical support. I like that role reversal where we have a Linux company putting on their page in small letters they don't support Windows 7, where in the past, I'm sure we would see we do not support Linux operating systems. I like the little role reversal there. Good stuff.
Yeah. So some creative little marketing on his part too.
Yes, and I will say, for what I consider to be a fair upgrade on this Wii 4th Gen for $499 out of the box.
$449,
yes. For a reasonable, in my mind, upgrade, for $130, you can get a 120-gigabyte SSD. A little microcomputer with a Haswell computer and an SSD, this thing should fly. Oh. Talk about impressive. Talk about impressive. And we have coupons. If you are on the brink of getting one of these, but you need to save a little bit of money, send me an email. Just send me an email and say you're going to use the coupon. I'll give you the coupon. There's no tweets. There's no Facebook mention. There's no Google Plus things. There's no take a picture of yourself here. There's no thing. Okay. There's nothing crazy you have to do. I'm not going to ask you to promote me in order to give you a coupon code. I just want to give you a coupon code. I want to make you happy with Open Hardware, and I want to make Chris happy by helping him get another customer. Help me help you, as Lalo said hundreds of times before, because that's all I really want to do. So if you are thinking you're going to get a computer and think Penguin could be one of those computers, send me an email. I'll send you a coupon code. The only thing I ask is that if you do not use that coupon code, you please let me know that you do not use it so I can give it to someone else to use.
Yeah, because we do have a limited number of these, so they are first come, first serve. And Dor, where would you like the correspondence for that to be?
You can just send that to podcast@lennoxfortherestofus.com or mail@podcast.com or doordoorgeek@gmail.com, whatever is easiest for you, or even doordoorgeek@freedommail.co.
And please put Think Penguin in the subject line. That way we'll know right away as we're going through email to get those coupon codes to you as soon as possible.
Good call, sir. Okay, I will say also, not only do I ask people to go out and promote me, I'll say I'm one of the few podcasts, and I'm not being arrogant or cocky when I say this, that has no problems promoting any podcast I listen to that I think I got any value out of. And I will say I've mentioned SMLR, I don't know, 20 times in this last year because they keep bringing good stuff that I've never heard of or that I forgot about. And this is one of those things I never heard of. This comes with almost a little bit of caveat. This isn't the end all be all. This is going to tell you everything and you don't need anything else. This is just a great tool, okay? It's called Explain Shell. Okay. Explainshell.com. it's almost like Google. You have a search box and you have a button next to it. Okay, you have a text box and a button next to it. The difference is in this one, you type in a command, any command in Linux. If you're at a website and it tells you to type a command, you can copy and paste it into here. Or if you, have something that you're trying to get working as a command, you can go type it in here. And what it does is it breaks down, no matter how long of a command it is, no matter if there's pipes or if there's greater than symbols or anything in it, it will take any length of a command and it will attempt to break it down into bite-sized portions. It will explain to you what rsync is. It will explain to you what this option is that is set. It will tell you step-by-step, basically, how this command is getting ran on your computer. If you have no idea what the command is, it's not going to make you a command line guru, okay? It isn't a miracle worker, but it will help you to understand what is going on. And to be honest, it's just a baby step, but it's a gigantic, abnormally sized baby step. I'll say that. I just think it's really cool.
Just for giggles, have you typed in sudo into this?
No. Sudo.
Just type in sudo.
Nice.
And then click on the word sudo with the 8 next to it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. This, much like what Dora's saying, it's good for, you know, if you do see, and it would be a great place to plug in, you know, anything that you see online that you might be thinking copying and pasting into your terminal, just to check it out and see what exactly does this do. Although you're not going to be able to copy and paste most things because it'll be specific to, you know, directories either on your machine or on, some sort of a web host you might be trying to get a file from. But once you start to recognize the commands, you know, it's usually in the beginning of the text. So you can take that and say, well, what does that mean? And then type it into here and get a pretty good explanation, a basic explanation as to what you're about to do. But yeah, for giggles, type in sudo, and then you're given all these things you can do with sudo, like sudo dash capital A, dash lowercase b. It's all this stuff. And I didn't know any of this. This is amazing.
Yeah, now I will say you can have commands in there with directories and stuff, and it will tell you this is the source path. This is the destination path. This is the path to the file. I mean, it will try to help you. But yes, and I will say, if you like go to command line foo and you find something crazy and paste it in here, like Cody's saying, clicking on the command after it turns it, you could literally sit here for probably 2 hours reading up on all of the fine-grained details and options that goes along with any given command. Now, I'll say partially what this does is it just shows you the man page for a command. But, it's a little bit, it's a little bit easier on the eyes instead of having a black background and white text or whatever in your terminal. But it also, steps you through the process to the man page. It's not just a dump of information. This is gold, and I cannot thank Matt, Mary, Tony, enough for bringing these kind of stuff out on their podcast. And this was like a month ago. This was on episode 113, entitled PP. And I can't remember what the PP stood for, but I remember they called it PP.
Mm. Personal protection.
Sure.
I think it was their firearms episode.
Yes. Yeah. With that guest.
Yep.
Tracy Holtz and Richard Hughes and Patrick Davila all talking about gun safety, I believe. Yes.
I remember that. Yep. And Matt fell out of his chair and he laughed before and after and during.
Yes, exactly. Okay. This next link, I'm a personal hater of best articles, but I just wanted to throw this kind of thing out there. Okay. omgubuntu.co.uk, which is a site I have very mixed feelings about. I go through hatred spasms on it, and then they have a couple things on there I think are pretty cool. But this is an example of how Linux on the desktop is super niche, whatever, because the best stuff they can come up with as the best Linux applications of 2013, the first one is a email client. I'm a firm believer email clients are, email is archaic. Okay, granted, we all use it every day, but the technology of email itself is archaic. Okay, this is like Stone Man technology we're using on our computers. And I believe a fair to probably more than half the people out there don't use installed clients. We use webmail. I mean, Gmail's been out now for 8 years. I mean, it started back then with Hotmail and Gmail. I don't think the majority of people now use desktop email clients, but they say number one on their list is Geary. Sure, I guess. Maybe in the UK, I don't know. But then they go through and they actually do surprise me a little bit with a couple of these apps. Number two, Birdie Twitter app. I do like the idea of not accessing Twitter through the browser. It just seems easier on the eyes, easier to read, more condensed, more concise, less ads and spam, I'll say. So I think that's a good find. And then the third one is Spring Seed. We've done a lot of these shows before, Cody, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard of Spring Seed. I have no idea what it is.
It looks like almost like an Uber note-taking application.
Well, it's notes, and then it has syncing in it, because they keep mentioning Dropbox and Nitro, which are two syncing applications that I know of. So this one I'm going to have to look at, because I do like the idea of notes, but I also want my notes to be ubiquitous everywhere. I want it to be ultra heterogeneous. I want it to be everywhere, not just on my local LAN or on computers. After that, Unity Tweak Tool, a Ubuntu-specific tool. Okay, now, Geary is also geared towards Ubuntu. I know that. But Unity Tweak Tool is only for Ubuntu unless you install Unity on a different operating system, and I don't know if those people actually exist out in the wild.
I think those people are held at gunpoint, and even then, they're very, very hesitant to do so.
Right. These are best Linux applications. But, of course, this is omgubuntu.uk. So, after that...
Right.
We have the Intel Graphics Driver Installer. I will say...
Before you go on to that really quick, I just want to say... If you haven't used Ubuntu Tweak before and you're an Ubuntu user, I use that specifically to do a few things whenever I have Ubuntu on a main rig. I'm going to try it in conjunction or just to try the Unity Tweak tool because I'm going to reinstall tomorrow and I'll report back next week.
Yeah, I'll say if you desire any customization ability at all and you're on Unity, then you have to have this tool or else you'll go crazy. And I will say Martin in the chat made a good point. Note-taking tools on desktop applications are great, but Evernote is both and it's everything. And they do have there is an Evernote compatible application you can install on your Linux desktop that is true Linux native. I can't remember the name of it, or you can install Evernote and Wine. I did install it before and I used it for months and months. I was deathly impressed at how well it worked and how good it looked. I figured it would look a little odd and act a little weird. No, ran perfect. So good call, Martin. As always. Okay. After that, Intel Graphics Driver Installation. This was really quiet all year. To me, this was one of those things that was very, it actually is big, even though no one really has to use it, but just because it's there, it means a lot. I'll say that because Intel graphics drivers, while they're not NVIDIA and they're not ATI, I'm a firm believer in taking something and getting the most out of it as possible, rather than having something enormously big and getting it to work good. I want to tweak as much out of something small as possible. So I use as little power as possible and I get the best possible effects out of it. That's what Intel graphics are. And Intel graphics drivers are open. Okay. When the day comes to where we can get infected on the Linux desktop, I firmly believe one of the strongest attack vectors are going to be closed sourced binary video drivers. Just like on Windows, it's mainly Flash, Adobe Acrobat, Java. On Linux, I believe it's going to be video drivers, but I have no idea what I'm talking about. I'm just guessing. But with open video drivers, I think it'll be much harder for people to take advantage of that. We have a couple other things beneath it. They even mentioned VLC. How in the hell is VLC one of the best apps of 2013, okay? It's one of the best apps of all time. It's been out, and it's been out forever. It isn't new. My logic is, if you're the best of 2013, then you should be new for 2013. Maybe.
Yeah, well, if they had mentioned a specific version number, then I would have been like, yeah, okay.
You can.
But you know what? If it comes to software you can run on Linux and there's a word best in the article, I think I'd be a little upset if they didn't mention VLC. Here's the scenario. Okay, let's say last year another video player came up and they're like, yeah, this is the best. Everybody be like, nope, it's VLC. You shut your mouth. You erase that. You put VLC on there. So they just like, we'll just put VLC on here. Next.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to take that back. VLC should be in every best list ever pop, period. Touche.
That's true.
Touche.
Best sandwiches.
Yes. There's VLC sandwiches. With a little bit of mutton, really lean mutton.
Mm-hmm.
It's good.
Yep.
Right.
All the resolutions.
Right. And there's a couple in here I'm going to skip, but there's a couple more I was going to mention. Lightworks. This can't be the best because it still technically doesn't even work. I mean, it's still in kind of alpha beta-ish phase. So maybe it's the best thing to look forward to. I'll go for that because this is true professional grade, award-winning video editing software. So I'm really excited to see when this does become fully baked and is available for everywhere. So I'm looking forward to it, but it's definitely not the best.
I can remember listening to, other Linux podcasts before I was a listener of this show, before this show existed, and they were like announcing Lightworks, and I was super excited because I was doing a lot of video editing back then, and it still isn't here in full form. So yeah, I think it's really to the point now where people can kind of, cross their arms and lean back in their chair and they go, yeah, we'll see.
I will say, I do think you can join a private beta, but that's the only way I think you can actually get a copy of it. And I've never heard of a private beta being wonderful. It's buggy. Mm-hmm. It's private beta. It's buggy. That's just fact. But I will say, I picked on them for having these Ubuntu things on their list. Well, then they kind of make up for it. At the end, granted, it's the last one on the list, GNOME Music Preview. And it says, it's highly unstable GNOME PPAs. You can't even use it in Ubuntu, but they mention it's called GNOME Music Preview. The only way I can explain this is a super touchy-feely, dare I say, almost Apple-esque experience of listening to your music because there's huge icons representing the music that you're looking at. You can instantaneously sort by albums, artists, or songs, little play button, little progress meter, but big icons representing these songs.
Yeah. So, yeah, it definitely reminds me of the iTunes interface, especially with those buttons along the top.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, so that's some of the best stuff. I mean, there's really no such thing as the best stuff, but that's what they say. There's some best stuff. I say anytime we see those kind of lists, we should always take everything with a grain of salt and just look at it for what it is and just use that because maybe there is stuff in there that we either forgot about or we just never heard of. So it's always good for discovery purposes, I'll say. Okay. Between you and me, Cody, I'll just say I have a lot of dealings with people who don't really completely understand some of the technologies that are coming at us. Either they're coming at us or they're already here.
What?
Just roll with me. I want to first click to a link where it basically says, the future of cloud computing now runs on all versions of Linux. And it's a thing called Docker, okay? Quick, we talked about, what was it called? We talked about the quote-unquote new version of CoreOS. CoreOS was developed in a garage, and one of the head developers on it is one of the head kernel maintainers for Linux, okay? A guy who really knows what he's talking about, okay? CoreOS was the distributable, updatable, upgradable operating system. It was an operating system designed to be a internet server operating system, which we've never actually had before. We've always had a server operating system, and then we would put stuff on it to make it work better on the internet or on the public-facing internet. So now we're gearing the operating system with that, okay? Well, he one of the guys in there made this thing called Docker. Okay. The only way I can explain Docker quickly is it's like portable apps. In portable apps, we have directories where we can copy from computer to computer to computer and run an application, and we get the exact same experience on every computer. The settings are the same. The default settings are the same. The Windows state is the same. All the data in the application is the same. So that's kind of like what Docker is. Docker is the ability, it's an application that will let you take another application and put it into a single container. Okay. And those containers can be moved from computer to computer. So it's like transplantable applications. Okay.
Is that kind of like, I don't know how much you know about this, but is that kind of like the same way with jails in BSD?
No, jails is really only done for security reasons, from what I gather. Jails is the ability to take an application and isolate it from the rest of the network. It doesn't mean you can copy that jail anyplace else on any other computer and it will work. It's just its own isolated, restricted environment. This is almost the opposite. The goal in mind isn't security, but it's ubiquity. I think that's the right word. Where you can basically take this folder and just migrate it to any other Docker instance, and it will just run.
Nice.
So it does have similar attributes of a jail, but its goal is not security focused. Also, there's a new thing, which I believe by the same guy, and it's called Boot to Docker. Okay. So what this is, this is a super lightweight Linux distribution, not based on Core OS, because now we can run it anywhere, but it's based on Tiny Core Linux. So it's only 24 megabytes and will boot in 5 to 6 seconds, and it will run completely in RAM. Okay. Nothing's faster on a server than RAM access. And here's the, for instance, I'll give you. When you're running a database server on a public facing internet, you really should look at how the database is used. Is it primarily used for reading the database or writing to the database? If you're just reading to the database, or if you have a static HTML site, everything should be pushed into RAM that can be pushed into RAM, because it's faster to send out over the network. The only time you should access a hard drive is when you have to write stuff, okay? So this Linux entire operating system is in RAM, okay? And then it's boot to Docker, which means you can, in 5 to 6 seconds, boot up an instance of this, okay, on any kind of cloud hosting provider that will let you boot your own operating system, which there will be more of these in the future, only more. And then you can, in 5 to 6 seconds, have it booted up. Depending on the size of the Docker container, you could have your application running in 10 seconds. You can go from 100 servers to 1,000 servers, or 1,000 servers to 10,000 servers in 5 to 6 seconds. In 5 to 6 seconds,
I've seen faster.
I mean, sure you have. In 5 to 6 seconds, you could basically be everywhere in the world, every country, have a server instance spun up if you have the right infrastructure set up. This is insane, okay?
That is pretty fast.
Okay. I was talking about all this because this is one of the things people don't understand. All of that, what I was talking about, is the essence, is the backbone of how we can leverage the ideas of cloud computing. Okay. Going by the National Institute of Standards and Technology, not me, going by them, they're saying these are the 5E essential characteristics for something to be called cloud computing. It's not just a server on the internet that you access. It's not just something you can map and copy stuff to. Okay. It might be cloud storage, or it might be a cloud service, but it's not cloud computing. Okay. Cloud computing, one of the five, is on demand self service. That means a consumer can unilaterally provision computing capabilities, such as server time, network storage. Okay. So what they mean is on demand. That means you can automate or you can by hand instantaneously ask for more resources, like that boot to Docker. So you can instantaneously ask for new resources to boot these things up. Okay. That's one of the things that it's needed with cloud computing. You can instantaneously get more resources or less. And it's typically based upon how much do you actually need it, because the more resources you ask for, the more you're paying for. So it's always on demand. You use as little as you possibly need. Up. Oh, now we're getting busy. We're getting slash dotted. We're getting boing boinged. We're getting dug. We're getting Reddit, whatever. Then your resources go up and then you pay for it. And then when the demand dies down, you pull back those resources. This is all automated on the cloud management applications. Okay. Number two, broad network access, i.e. all over the world, the public facing internet. Okay. To really be cloud computing, it shouldn't matter if you're in your house. It shouldn't matter if you're in New York City. It shouldn't matter if you're in Uzbekistan. As long as you have access to the public internet, you should be able to access those resources. Now, it doesn't mean they have to be publicly addressable. You could remotely have a VPN, you know, it's as long as you can access it on a wide network. Okay. Three, resource pooling. Okay. This is one of the hard things to actually understand, but what it is, it's basically automatically, dynamically floating the need of resources up and down. That's the way I look at it. And it could be physical or it could be virtual. And it's all based upon demand. Okay. Okay. Four, this is one of the things that really is deeper than what I'm going to say. Okay. Rapid elasticity. This is hard to explain, okay? Capabilities can be, and I'm going to say this time it's scaled. Capabilities can be scaled, provisioned, and released in some cases automatically to scale rapidly outward and inward with demand, okay? I know it sounds like I've said now the same thing three times, but they're actually different, okay? This is why so many people don't understand cloud computing. And I really honestly don't understand it. I think I understand how it can be used and how it should be used and how we can perceive it. Okay. Scale. Scale to me also means the application that you're running is aware of the current scale and it can be load balanced on multiple different plateaus. It can be load balanced in the networking layer and the software layer. The software needs to be aware of the scale of elasticity where the current state is at. Okay. And that's a functional part of it. Okay. Five, measured service. Okay. This basically comes to metering capabilities. I'm going to beg people, if you want to actually try to understand cloud computing, A, don't listen to tech journalists, okay? All they're looking for is clicks and money. Go to Wikipedia, look at the article, research the article, okay? And what I'll say is one of the things that you might come into fruition is with cloud computing, you also should not be reliant or beholden on a single provider, okay? What I mean by that is you should be able to have your application running as a service up on the cloud and have an instance of it on Amazon EC2 and have an instance of it on Rackspace and have an instance of it, you know, on all these other services. Yet as far as your computing mechanism is concerned, it's all one cluster. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Don't put all your eggs in one basket, essentially.
Yes. And that comes to the aspect of redundancy. With correct elasticity, you have redundancy to where complete continents could fall into the ocean and your application will not even hiccup, burp, flinch, flutter, stutter, hesitate, nothing. It will just keep working, okay? As far as everything I know that I'm aware of, the Microsoft Azure solution is not true cloud computing. Hey, from everything I see, it is and it can be platform as a service and it can be software as a service, but you're tied in with a certain mechanism that limits the elasticity and the redundancy available to you. Can you use it for cloud computing needs like small C cloud, small C computing? Yes, of course you can. But for true capital C cloud, capital C computing, I still don't see how Windows can be in the cloud computing realm. And part of the reason is you have about 1,000 developers working on the Microsoft kernel at any time. Sounds like a lot, doesn't it? No, it's not. It's not a lot. There's over 100,000 kernel developers working on Linux right now. Okay. Mm-hmm. Microsoft has always been called, and like just like IBM, the big ship that takes a long time to turn, but when it turns, look out. The reason it turns so slow is because it's so grossly understaffed in comparison to something like Linux. Granted, they're all working 9 to 5. They're all working dedicated hours. And a percentage of the people working on Linux are hobbyists. But a percentage of those people also work at Red Hat. A percentage of those people also work at IBM. A percentage of those people also work at HP. Okay? Linux is insanely more nimble and quick to respond. This cloud computing thing, while, yes, it's like mainframes from 40 years ago, a lot of the technology being used is new. Linux is nimble. It is quick to adjust. That's why we already have operating systems completely geared from the ground up to be a public-facing internet server. That's why we are developing things like this thing called Docker, in order to be able to let you float applications or flow applications, as VMware would call it, from server to server. I'm not going to lie, I'm tempted to have, if I can digest cloud computing enough, and if I feel like I can regurgitate enough of the aspects of it in really easy to understand parts, my talk at this coming NELF, April 5th, Harvard in Boston, Massachusetts, or right outside Boston, might be on cloud computing, cloud infrastructure, cloud utilization, something. It might be something on cloud. I will say that because while Mr. Jonathan T. Nato hates the cloud, I don't think, here's the thing, between you and me, Cody, I don't think he hates the cloud. I think how...
Well, he hates the cloud because when he was a kid, he and his parents left a theater and his parents in an alleyway, they got rained on.
Because they went out the wrong door.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's right.
There was no awning there. It was all the cloud's fault.
Right, exactly. I think he's really upset at how people who have no idea what they're talking about keep talking about the cloud and how it's going to save us all. You know what I mean? And I'll say this. One of the big things that not a lot of people talk about in regards to the cloud is security, okay? Okay. There's different types of cloud you can do. You can do software as a service, platform as a service, all these things as a service, okay? I think one of the biggest things going forward is how much security do you have over each of those different types? My logic is it's going to come to a point very quickly where if you do not own the private keys to decrypt data on any hosting type of any kind, you don't have good security. I mean, while right. Yes, you might have AES 256 encrypted and it's all encrypted on transport and all this kind of thing. I think Steve Gibson's PIE, pre-internet encryption, or PIE as he calls it, isn't just a buzzword. I think it's going to literally mean a lot as time goes on, because because
you're doing it locally and you can control it.
Right. Because if we're pitching this to a business, it would be once your intellectual property leaves your network and it isn't encrypted using keys that you completely own and control, you now lost complete control over your intellectual property. And like to the homeowner, it would be if you're sitting at home and you upload a PDF of your tax documents. Once that document leaves your network and it is not encrypted using keys you completely own, your information is on the public internet and you can never take it back down. So encrypting before you go up is extremely, extremely, I think it's only going to become more and more vital, which I do know is going to challenge how the cloud is communicating with the desktop. But the only constant we have in all of this is change. So we're going to, you know, it's just going to keep changing as time goes on. Right.
Well, to kind of tie back into something I was listening to last night, I was getting caught up on Geeksters and they were talking about CryptoLocker. And, you know, all of these, you know, people and businesses, you know, falling prey to that awful, you know, piece of software. And for those of you who don't know what it is, definitely go check it out. Geeksters, I think it was like episode 95 through 100. They covered it on a few episodes. But I was thinking about that and I was like, you know what? I do so many different reinstallations and I have my stuff backed up in non-network storage, offline storage, online storage, in so many different places. Like, even if I was running Windows, that would, I mean, it might screw me up for maybe a week's worth of data, but I have everything else backed up. And it's almost, I thought of it in terms of, like, I'm kind of a nomad when it comes to technology right now. I mean, if I lost one of my machines, I mean, it would suck. It'd be like, oh, I spent, you know, this many hundreds of dollars on this machine and I lost it, but I still have all my data elsewhere. I'm never out in the cold. And it's a different way of thinking. You know, if you think, you know, 5-10 years ago, you know, you probably kept your Windows installation from the day that it came home on your machine until, you know, the thing died or you put it in a closet and bought a new machine. Yep. You know, people don't do a lot of reinstallations anymore. Even I mean, you know, just as well as I do, you know, installing Windows 7 fresh is completely different from installing Vista fresh or, you know, XP fresh. It's just way easier.
Yeah.
So even for the layman to do reinstallations now, it's so simple. And their hands are held with those menus so easily, but there's not really an excuse to put all your eggs in one basket. And wow, I hope this machine doesn't die. I hope, you know, my house doesn't get broken into, or I hope, electrical fire doesn't come through and ruin all my equipment. Jokingly, you know, Jonathan always says he hates the cloud. And I think that especially for people in the IT industry, you know, the cloud, the thought of cloud computing when it was first announced, it was a little bit scary. People kind of, you know, bash on it a bit. But I think in another 5 or 10 years, it'll be kind of like to the point where, well, yeah, why wouldn't we be doing that in conjunction with, you know, a lot of local stuff?
Yeah.
You know, it's just going to be second nature. So there won't be resistance to it. By then, it'll be a more mature platform. And even now, it's more mature than it even was 2 or 3 years ago, to the point where we're able to embrace it in a lot more areas we haven't been able to previously and really seeing the benefits of it. And it'll be those pioneers that go forward and do open those avenues for us to really take advantage of it.
Oh, hell yeah. And I'll say some of the people that hate the cloud aren't like Jonathan. What I'll say is this. There are techs out there in all different levels of techs who hate tablets. And they,
right.
And part of it is because they believe with the tabletification, credit to Mark Cockrell, with that happening, the necessity of cleaning viruses and malware and all this stuff becomes much less. So they're not quote unquote needed as much. So they fear for their job. Right. Okay.
Yeah, as they should.
Well, no, then you just migrate to something else. You support them.
But then again, that fear is only based on the fact of, I'm not going to change.
Yeah.
I know how to do this one thing and it better stay that way or else.
Right. Well,
you got to constantly roll with the punches, especially in something that is as diverse and as quickly moving and changing as technology. I mean, you just have to.
Right. Well, the same thing exists for the cloud. You have these mm-hmm. on-site domain system network administrators who have these racks and all these racks and all these fans and all this air conditioning and all this stuff that they manage and they maintain. And the idea of losing that to someone else managing it scares them to death because that's their job security. Okay. That's their baby. Without them, without these servers, they don't need me is their mentality. When that's not the case, the only thing now becomes your responsibilities change. The only constant in this universe is change. If things didn't mm-hmm. change, we wouldn't be doing a podcast unless we'd be talking about cooking or something. Because
now I'm hungry.
I'm always hungry. change is inevitable. Change is always there. In technology, it's the one that will I don't foresee it basically ever slowing down. I mean, we now have hockey puck size computers from ThinkPenguin that's all open hardware. You can have SSDs with 8 gigs of RAM, and I'm still want one, even though we talked about all this other stuff. That thing looked cool. But with the cloud, it's all going to change. It's not the end-all be-all. This, what's going to happen is we're going to have this cloud, and we're going to have this rush, and we're going to have these cool things happening, and then something's going to happen. Where then, instead, like, we're going to have home servers. We're going to have boxes in the closet that are small. They're not too big, but they're really powerful, and they have immense storage in them. And then we use that. And then wherever we're at, we can go back and connect to them for all of our cloud computing needs. It's just going to keep going back and forth. I mean, you know, it's just a fact of life. But if you're beholden, if you rely on something that exists today, and if that thing isn't here tomorrow, you think you're not going to make any money, it's time to learn something else. Coursera, edX, all these other places on the internet where you can go and take genuine college courses and you can expand your horizons. If you don't expand, you're shrinking. That's all I'm going to say. If you don't learn new stuff, you are forgetting stuff you already learned, period. Off of that soapbox. Just a quick tool at the end that I literally just found minutes before this podcast. And yes, I already installed and played with just a little bit. Okay. The super quick explanation is on Windows, we have System Restore. On Linux, we don't have System Restore. We have things that are kind of a little bit like System Restore, but all we can really do is roll back the kernel, and that's it. Which means if we install something that really makes something go boom, we can't roll back, okay? Now, step up a application called Time Shift, T-I-M-E-S-H-I-F-T, and it's available this write-up at Unix Men. Unix Men, not like omgubuntu.co.uk. I always like Unix Men. They always have good stuff. They always have good writers. They always have good documentation. They always have good screenshots. They always have good instructions. And they say things in a pretty plain English way, which I need because I'm barely keeping up with English. What Time Shift allows you to do is to basically have snapshots, not of your downloads folder, not of your documents folder, not of your pictures folder, not of your desktop. It basically ignores all of that user level stuff. And what it does is it creates snapshots of your system. So you basically just download the app, install the app, do your first backup, and then after that you can schedule monthly, weekly, daily, hourly, or on reboot. You can make system restore points, or you can make them on demand. I will say the only thing I haven't looked into yet is if your system is unbootable, can you boot to a live CD and do a restore? That's what I haven't looked at.
Yeah, that, or I'm thinking of, you know, like you bought, you know, mom and dad a new machine and they upgraded, you know, Ubuntu to, you know, 14.10 or whenever that comes out or whatever, and they just don't like it. Can they roll back, or let's say 14.04, can they roll back to 13.10 with this?
I would say that, as long as it's still bootable, should be an easy restore.
Yeah.
Granted, the first time they boot up, it might take a little bit of time to recompute some of the things in your home folder configuration-wise, but I would think, hypothetically, it should work fine. I'm definitely going to play with this. I'm going to do my best to not actually break my machine, but to experiment and see if I can restore it back.
Well, Dor, a very wise man once said, the first thing you need to do with your Linux installation is break it.
I know, but I've had this installed for a while now.
Well, then it's long overdue, my friend.
Oh, it was already broke. Dude, on this computer, when I do a sudo command, it doesn't ask me for root or for a password. It just works. Talk about unsafe. I mean, Lord, come on.
Is that your hybrid machine?
Yes, it is. This thing completely broke.
Yeah.
I've been podcasting with this thing for a year. It's been broke for a year.
I know. Well, and then I know your thought process is with that. You're like, I should just do a reinstallation, but yeah, I'm going to get to that in a minute.
No.
And then everything else happens.
No.
Well, hold on. That's about 40% of it. The other 60% of it that you're sort of like, okay, it's the angel and the devil on both sides of your shoulders, right? One of them's going, but you need to keep this consistent because it's a workhorse and it's a great fallback for podcasting, and you know it works and you don't even mess with it. You're just going to mess everything up and you put all this time into it and it just works. And then there's the other guy going, yeah, and we could just take a nap too.
Well, close. You're definitely close.
Yep.
I'll say...
Okay, so 59-41.
Oh, no, you're higher than that. You're like 80% right. This is my podcasting rig. I got to do a podcast again like tomorrow. I don't think I'm going to have it all done by tomorrow. You know, I can just take a nap. So you're close. Yeah. I give you credit. You're there. Yeah. You're there.
I know how those gears work. I know it.
Yeah, absolutely. So...
But yeah. This is... And I mean, I'm thinking it just... I mean, this would be great for education as well. Because if you start to deploy, you know, in a lab, a bunch of Linux machines, and kids start to go tinker as they do, you know, you can throw a wrench in there pretty easily and mess some stuff up, especially if they're doing copy and paste earlier and not taking advantage of that website we mentioned earlier in the show.
Yeah.
Just blip, hit that little reset switch, boot it right back up.
Yep.
That's very cool. Very cool tool. And ultimately, I think it's going to be the one thing to get Steve C. to finally migrate to Linux full time. Because System Restore is basically here.
Yes, and I know that was his crutch for a long time.
Right. You see, he says it's the audio creation and it's the artistic tools, but really, there's no System Restore.
Right.
If he can't do tech, calls on it, he won't use it at home.
Oh yeah. Super quick mention. I'm gonna try to add this to the notes too. GFI Max. GFI Max is a MSP portal. Yes, I know that's a bunch of acronyms and stuff. What it is it's a service you can pay for that you log into a company's website and you can manage a whole bunch of computers, okay? All in one interface. You can push scripts, you can push updates, you can remote desktop, you can do all these different things, okay? But they have Android clients and Linux clients, okay? They use TeamViewer for the remote desktop, okay? TeamViewer is available on Linux. TeamViewer is available on Android. You can remote into Android devices, okay? It's not on GFI Max right now. It will be, I guarantee you, within a few months at the most, it's going to be there for both Linux and Android. The two caveats is, when we put it on my Linux desktop, it thinks it's a Linux server, and that is probably because because I have LAMP installed to do Apache, MySQL, and PHP. But in all actuality, every Linux desktop is kind of a server. So they might be just doing that because it is. But here's the whole kicker. It's dirt cheap, and you only pay for what you use, i.e. if you support a small business of 10 computers, you can have almost every capability through this tool of pushing scripts, remotely doing updates, getting reports from error logs, disk space utilization, I/O, is the computer running, all these kind of things from one interface for less than $3 a month. And hypothetically, this month two of their computers die, you're not charged for those two computers because you only pay for what you use. And it's so little, you can easily charge your customer for this. And soon you're going to have, I believe it, I have no insider information or anything, but I truly believe you're going to have very similar abilities with their Linux agent. Because right now, I put it on this computer, Liam could look at, from Liam Tech, he could look at my Linux, and he was telling me all kinds of facts about my installation. So it at least pulled a whole bunch of information up to the server. GFI is a huge company in the enterprise space. This is a tool for small businesses to give services to other businesses. So that's why this company name might not be familiar to everyone, but I think it is a super cool tool, and I hope it only gets better. And I want more people to compete for this kind of tool because it's cool. And talk about cloud infrastructure, software as a service, that's what this is.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry.
It's cool. It's like,
oh, it is.
It's like
we'll
bacon.
Keep our eye on it.
Yeah. It's like bacon.
Well, hey, dude, if you're about to endorse as much as you endorse bacon, that's all we're going to talk about on the show.
It's cool. I'm not going to say, you know, I'm going to...
It'll be an unofficial sponsor of the Mixer Rest of Us.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can go get a free trial 30 days. With the free trial, you get everything. Not some stuff, not a taste.
It's not like a freemium thing?
No. Well, no, no. For the first month, you get everything you want. Everything.
That's good.
Yeah.
Because... See, I like to see more companies do that, because whenever I see something come along like that, like, you know, you see certain tech tools or anything, right? You think, okay, it's a 7, 14, 30-day trial. It's anywhere between 25 and 60%, so, you know, unlocked full version. But I think the one thing that these companies don't take into account, and at least some smaller ones that are really trying to, you know, get sales on this, is the fact that your time as a person testing this software is also worth quite a bit. And if you have to run this through its paces, and if you think it's hindered, I mean, it sucks to, you know, go install something and sort of put through a test. Let's say it's some sort of a tool that text would use. You know, you're like, you know, going about with it, you're like, oh yeah, oh man, sure, would be nice if I had that one feature there, but I wasted this hour or this hour and a half. I mean, yeah, it's kind of a great sales tactic, but at the same time, you know, your time is worth money too. So to see fully featured during a time trial or a trial like this, very, very cool.
Yeah, absolutely, good stuff.
Okay, I looked at this correctly. That was our last one.
Yes, sir.
The last link for this week. Yeah, we're gonna keep this week anyway. We're keeping it to about an hour. That's not bad. It's not gonna be a 3-hour fest. Oh. We're not going to do a 26-hour show.
I'll just say, speaking of...
By the...
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Speaking of three-hour tour, the professor from Gilligan's Island died today. 89 years old. That man could do magic with coconuts. That's all I'm saying. Magic.
That's very true. And very sad. Very sad at the same time.
Yeah. And if you're under the age of...
That explains something I saw earlier.
Yeah. Dare I ask, what was it?
Oh, it was just a reference to him. I saw a shirt with him on it, and I was like, because it said Skipper on it.
Yeah.
It was just him, like, doing the thumbs up Skipper. I was like, oh, okay. And then I was like, well, like, I guess that's a piece of pop icon, pop icon. It's out there in the world. And then to find out he died today, I don't even know if the two are related. Maybe this is just completely random, and I'm not giving it the attention it deserves.
Could be. I'll just say, if you're under the age of 38, you might not have any idea what we're talking about, but just believe me when I say it was iconic. It was everywhere. It was genuinely funny back then. You look, watch it today. I'm sure it's not funny, but it was funny.
It was the love triangle that happened in the Archie comic books, but on an island.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Yep.
Basically what it is.
Mm-hmm. So wait a minute. Are you a Ginger or a Marianne person guy?
Oh, I gotta go Ginger, man. I'm redhead all the way.
I know, man. Marianne, she had the hair, the you know, pigtails kind of thing. But I will say, with all that,
yeah,
I'm sorry. I like the millionaire and his wife, Thurston Howell III, class act.
You're just hoping to buddy up with them, you know, maybe be their layabout deadbeat friend in their vacation home, you know. No, I'm watching the home for the fuck. Yeah, whatever, dude.
Well,
you're being a deadbeat.
I'm sure they're both
long ultimately
dead.
Trying to,
you know.
Hey, you know what? There things with cryogenics can happen.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think $1 million back then, and you know, they got off the island somehow. Spoiler alert, right? You know, they maybe sold a memoir. You know, rolled it into, you know, even more cash. You know, they could be robotic citizens, their brains in these, you know, mechanical robot creatures. You know, they could have a trust fund set up, and maybe you're just trying to buddy up to them to get more money in order to help fund the Indiegogo campaign for the Accessible Computing Foundation and their development on Orca.
Good man.
Yeah. I'm good at one thing, and that's segues. Please visit the ACF.co. If you click on their blog link at the top of the page, you will see directly to their Indiegogo campaign, still running another 29 days from today, the 16th of January 2014. That's going to put it on Valentine's Day. So if you have plans that day with your significant other, or you're just going to lay in the yard and eat chocolate, yell at kids walking by, save yourself the hassle of having to worry about clicking on the link that day. Just do it now. go on there, donate what you can. For those of you who don't remember or don't know, Orca is the open source alternative to
Jaws.
Yeah, yeah, the screen reader, which is a essential tool for blind people to interface with computers, and those are the vision impairments, any sort of vision impairment. Our good friend Jonathan T. Nato, Admiral, I salute you, sir, is heading up that campaign. And any donation you make will help to fund that campaign and fund the development, because that's really what it is. Like, I was hearing him on Podet's meetup, and there's only one person working on it full time, and it's not even their full. I mean, it's not even their full time job. Right. I don't think. It was that lady in France, right?
Yeah, it's lady in France or Spain, but yeah, and yeah,
oh, Spain, it was Spain.
Yeah, and they're working on something else, and the company deems it necessary for them to do updates to it, and that's it. It isn't a full time job. It's crazy.
Right. Yeah. It's amazing to hear him talk about the bureaucracy and the kind of history with this piece of software. But if I remember correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the continued development only exists specifically, and it's paid for and funded by that governmental organization only because they require it to meet certain standards. Exactly. Or they have to devote so much money to that kind of development anyway, so they just decided to do that.
Yep.
Something along those lines.
Yep.
Yes. So to think, if it wasn't for that, you know, nation, wherever it is, I want to say it's Spain. If it wasn't for that, this project wouldn't exist, or would just be dead in the water and not receive updates. Yeah. So to think, even if he gets enough money to pay another developer to work on it full time for a year, you're going to see huge leaps and huge improvements on the software. So head over to the acf.co, or you can just go to indiegogo.com and search for Orca, or search for Jonathan Nato, and you can find it right there.
Yep.
Very cool. All right, Dor, any other parting words before we ask you where we can find you?
I just want to thank everyone for their support over this holiday season. Podnet.com/Amazon helped a lot, a heck of a lot. I cannot thank you guys enough. If you guys still can go there, great. If not, you know, I completely understand. Any and all support you can give to this network is thoroughly appreciated. We here always first and foremost do what we can because we like doing it, and we just hope that you guys like hearing it. So let us know if you want to. Don't hesitate to tweet about a show you hear here, Facebook it, Google Plus it, or whatever. But I'm going to throw this out there. Don't forget, we have forums, a very tight-knit group of guys out there offering all kinds of help for all kinds of topics. It isn't instantaneous like a phone call or an IRC chat, but it is help nonetheless. And I want to thank everyone who goes to those forums and offers any and all help. I literally try to go there at least 3 or 4 times a day and try to help. And a fair amount of the time, other guys beat me to the punch to help people. So I thank them immensely.
I couldn't agree more. It's your continued support that helps us do a lot of the things that we do when it comes to these shows, and we definitely do appreciate it. That being said, you know, Valentine's Day is rolling around. If you want to get yourself a gift or a gift for a loved one, you could probably find it on Amazon.
Yeah.
And use pondus.com/Amazon. The tax time's coming up. You know, if you're listening to the show and if you're getting any sort of tax refund, I know you're going to be upgrading your rig, doing a little something, maybe just buying a USB stick, doing a little something. If you go to pondus.com/Amazon, buy it there, you're going to pay no more than you would normally, and a little bit of that goes to helping us continue to bring you this content that we bring you every week for free. So if you do that, it would be much appreciated. Don't also forget a lot of the great shows on the Podnuts Network. Some new additions as of the past few months. Podnuts Meetup, which I'm getting caught up on. Fantastic show. If you guys used to listen to Linux Basics, it's like that, but all areas of tech, not just Linux. Or actually all areas of pretty much anything. I mean, you guys go into quite a few different discussions, don't you, Dor?
As long as it's not gun repair or hunting techniques or the best fishing right. rod that's on sale kind of thing. Dare I say, if you can do it inside your house, it's closer to being fair game. And I know that's almost a horrible thing to say, but as long as it's regarding tech, pod nuts, podcasting, or anything that, you know, anyone on the show is genuinely interested in, and it could pertain to a majority of our audience, it's fair game. But I will say people could technically get booted from the show live. It could happen. It hasn't, but it could happen.
Two things haven't happened on that show. Number one, no one's been booted from the show. Number two, I have yet to appear. I'm thinking they might be related.
I will say that very thought did cross my mind, sir.
And probably several other people, too. Because yeah. If there's one person that likes to fly right off the handle, it's me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Love to fly. I have special gloves that I wear just so that I don't get splinters on my fingers before I fly off the handle.
Yep.
And it might happen. So tune in. You might hear me get booted for the first. They won't even know what to do. They'll be like, how do you do this in Mumble? And the whole while, I'll still be flying off the handle. And it'll be like they're in that missile silo in the beginning of War Games. Mm-hmm. Like, where's the second key? Mm-hmm. You know, they won't be able to find it. Like, I left it at home. Jerry, you're fired. You left the second key at home. How are we going to lock down the missile? Podness.com. Check out the links along the left. Call That Girl show. Lisa Hendrickson, of course, our good friend Lisa, fantastic podcaster and technician, specializing in remote support. She just posted a new episode of her show, the Call That Girl Remote Support Tech Show, which is great. It has to do with prepaid tickets. And for those of you who don't know what that is, definitely check out that episode. It's going to help you secure some really good revenue if you are a tech and you're looking into moving into remote support. Her entire list of things, of books that she's made, any podcast she's on. Every time you listen to her, you're just like, wow, you know, lots of good stuff from her. And of course, Nightwise from Nightwise.com is now officially on Podnuts as of a few months back. And he's just getting ready to ramp up, I want to say season 8, if I'm not mistaken, of his shows.
Sounds right.
Which I go back and re-listen to them all the time. Fantastic, fantastic content. All right, Dor. So where can we find you online?
You can hit me off on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Google+, Podnuts forums, email, while it is archaic, but we all use it. So mail at podnuts.com, podcast at linuxfortherestofus.com, doordoorgeek@gmail.com, doordoorgeek@freedommail.co. I'm all over the place. You can hit me off on Voxer. I abuse Voxer. I literally abuse Voxer. And I will just say, while it might be a burden to myself, it might take away time from me for producing shows. It might take time away from me for upgrading the website. It might take time away from me from creating new content. It might take time away from me doing my household chores.
It might take time away from you from saying the words. It might take time away from me.
Exactly, exactly. It might take time away from me from talking to you. But
that's true.
I try to be as transparent as possible. I try to be as open to anyone as possible. If you have a question you want to ask me and you use Voxer, search for me. You'll probably find me. And you can ask me. We can talk. If you want to ask me a question, if you want to criticize me, if you want to help me, just contact me. I'm out there, man.
Very cool. Very cool. And as always, you can contact me just at cody@podness.com. Send me emails, and then send any emails specifically to the show, to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com, or if you'd like to send in mail to any of the Podnuts shows, just simple mail@podnuts.com. Now, I also have a freedommail.co email address, and I believe it's cody@freedommail.co, which of course is the email address you get for free for signing up to be a regular donator to the Accessible Computing Foundation. Which I think they have plans starting at $2 a month, and you get this awesome email service as well. Dor, I wanted to ask you, do you interface with that through a web portal, or do you use an external application in order to view that email?
I have, right now I'm actually testing multiple email applications on my Android device. I'm using Cloud Magic, which right now I think is eking out being the best one. Mail@.be, and I'm trying another one called MailWise. All of them can easily, simply connect. It's just your standard web mail protocols kind of thing. So virtually any client can connect to it. Even if you use Thunderbird, Outlook, or whatever, you can connect to it.
Right. Okay. Well, I was going to say that would give me a great incentive to try out Geary from the article we mentioned earlier. So I'll hit up Jonathan and get those credentials from him if I need them. I sure as have them somewhere. But yeah, I'll get my freedommail.co email address up running in Geary, and we'll get back to you folks and let you know how it turned out.
Very cool.
All right, guys. Well, hey, once again, thank you so much for everyone sending in good correspondence. Please continue to send in the emails to the places we mentioned earlier. And if you want to send us a voice message, please send it to, I'm getting my tongue tied like Martin on Geeksters. It's 1-8. No, no. Hold on. It's, I gotta actually refer to the doc. I was yelling it out last night at my phone at Martin, and he's in the chat now laughing maniacally. Yeah, okay, yeah, 7076 Podnut. Yeah, why didn't I forget? So if you want to send in a voicemail to Linux or Restivist, please send it into 7076 Podnut. That is 707-676-3688. And if you can, in the beginning of the message, try to indicate what show it's for, because it's an open voicemail line that we have for all the shows, and try to keep it at 60 minutes or 60 seconds or less, excuse me. As much as we would like to hear an hour long message from you, sometimes it doesn't make good for on air discussion. So, but just as much as Dor said earlier, don't hesitate to reach out to him, myself, or the show. We'd love to hear your feedback and help you out with any issue you have, or just hear what you have to say about the show or anything we've mentioned. That is it for tonight's show. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening. And remember, Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.
Do you sit on your butt all day? Are you tired of watching the weight pile on? Are you sick of what you see in the mirror and just too busy to do anything about it? The 28 Workouts Fitness Program was created with you in mind. Shed the weight and get into the best shape of your life. Workouts are only 25 minutes per day. No more than 4 days per week. No gym needed. No equipment needed. Instant download. Go to www.28workouts.com today for more details. Your time is now. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.